And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is The Athletic's dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you. We've got an interesting show and a lot to talk about with a very special guest, one of my favorite broadcasters. I say that even when he's not here. TSN's Ray Ferraro is with us. Ray, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Aaron. I hope everything's going okay where you are. And I'm up in Vancouver and we just got some restrictions laid down today from the provincial government. And so it doesn't matter where you are. Everybody's just trying to get through, right?
Yeah. Franklin County, which is where Columbus is, has a 4-week shutdown. Basically, you can go out for groceries, the pharmacy, work, and that kind of stuff. How restrictive is BC, and what are they enforcing it? What can they do to enforce it?
Well, right now, the restrictions literally came down a couple hours ago. So in any public space, you have to wear a mask indoors, which, of course, is the big one. It's really different here. I'm going to say, generally speaking, our provincial, the head doctor here, Dr. Bonnie Henry, says wear masks indoors and people will wear masks indoors. I mean, there'll be some that won't, but it's not a contentious issue. It's just you'll walk up to the door and somebody won't have their mask on, I'm assuming, and they'll say, you got to wear your mask, and the guy will pull it out of his pocket and put his mask on. So, that's the biggest one, though. For some reason, I haven't read or haven't understood why they don't have to in schools, which I'm not sure why. They've discouraged travel from health unit to health unit, which would be like county to county. So like for the holidays coming up there, you're supposed to bubble in within your family. You're not supposed to go see people elsewhere. And it sucks, right? Like you want to see your extended family, you want to see your friends. But we're looking around, and aside from the health numbers that are, that have climbed here, significantly for the way it's been, there's also the economic and the mental health destruction that has happened. And
totally.
So, people are trying to get their heads around it, but I think what frustrates me the most of this, Aaron, not to turn this into something else, but is that people don't seem to be able to understand that most of the doctors and most of the health officials, they're even with their livelihood, their life work being in pandemic study, is they're learning on the go too. They're doing the best they can.
Yes.
Like some things are not going to be right and they correct them.
Correct.
And then there's this outcry of, but they said this before. Yeah, right. And it was wrong. Yeah. And they've had time to learn about it and said, okay, now this is right. I don't know why it's such a problem.
What the word novel means. It's new. It's new. It's a novel coronavirus. They're learning about it as they go. I think we have a really hard time accepting when an expert says, I don't know. And sometimes that's the only answer you've got. But yeah, it's
well, you know, it's funny you say that. It, even in the world that you and I live in, you know, you get on a radio show, I'm on a panel somewhere, and it's really hard to say, you know what, I don't know. You don't want to sound like you're not informed, but sometimes you just don't know.
I don't know.
Like, I might say that in the next 30 minutes. That's actually a pretty decent chance I'm going to.
Oh, no, I've gave you an out now. I gave you an out. How's the family? Let me get to that before we delve into the hockey stuff. Is everybody with you well and thriving?
Yeah, they are. I've got kind of a crazy household. I have a 32 and a 29-year-old. The 32-year-old and his wife, they have two kids, and they live with us. And so we see them all the time. It's funny, you know, you have kids, and then when you have a grandchild or two, it's almost like you forget how great it is to have kids, because the grandkids are the very best. There is nothing better than feeding a 4-year-old ice cream at 10 in the morning. It's the best. And my son will go, "Dad, seriously?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he asked. It's not a big bowl." And, you know, so that's him. Landon, my 29-year-old, the hockey player, he just landed in Germany 2 days ago. So he had to do his COVID testing, and he's getting started there, which he's very thankful to be doing. And then my wife, Cammy Granato, who is like many, many guys' wives, holds the whole show together here. She's been incredibly busy she's a scout with the Seattle Kraken. So she was doing all that stuff during the bubble work and the Stanley Cup playoffs. And she's just finishing some more of it now. She's putting the finishing touches on a children's book. She has a really cool initiative with a company called FlipGive, and they have 500 grants that they're giving to girls to help them play hockey. You apply through FlipGive, and they're giving away money to help kids explore and stay in the game of hockey. It's really an awesome thing. Wow. Cammy's, she put herself on the back burner for, 13 years. We have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old. And, back in the day, there was nobody talking about a brand, but her brand went on hiatus. Yep. And now people are finding out again what Cammy has to offer the world of hockey. And I'm super proud of her. And but she is crazy busy. I go around, Aaron, I clean the house, and she's working like crazy. I got nothing to do. So until the World Junior Tournament starts, so pretty quickly. But I'll tell you, there's not many houses cleaner than ours right now. I've got nothing to do.
You're unbelievable.
With a broom and a vacuum, I'm pretty damn good.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So there is some hockey news sort of these last couple of days, where the players in the league are trying to figure out when they can start this thing and try to figure out how it's going to work. They did have the memo of understanding, but the owners have come back and asked for some tweaks to that. Now, there was talk that they wanted to prorate the salaries, which I could not believe that that's something that somehow slipped through the legal discussions. It turns out it wasn't that. They're just looking to defer some of those salaries, maybe up to 26% of salaries deferred. They're looking for more escrow. It still feels like it's not toxic like it had been. Fair and Bettman are still speaking daily, according to Pierre LeBrun, TSN's and The Athletic's Pierre LeBrun. So they're still talking, but it's a little saltier now than it was in the spring. What are your thoughts on where this stands? I keep coming back to the idea of just imagine if the players had gone to the owners and said, "We'd like to redo some of this stuff," and the laughing that would have incurred there. I get it. It's a slight different scenario coming the other direction. But your thoughts on these last few days and what this might hold?
Aaron, there is nothing that can be asked or suggested that surprises me in 2020. Like with the pandemic and the effects of it, there literally is nothing that surprises me. Like when I first read that, you know, looking for the deferment of salaries. You know, when I first saw that it was, you know, they were looking for a rebate, I was like, there was no chance. Like, that is ludicrous. Yeah. But of course, that's not what it is. It's a deferral. To me, it sounds like there's a deal to be made. But as a player who went through a lockout, a strike, and are retired just before the next lockout, after a while, it kind of rubs you the wrong way, like a rock in your shoe that's always there, that why are you always the safety net? Why are you always the place that the negotiation has to be started at? Why are you always being asked for something and then you've got to claw back and try and get something in trade for what the owners want that you didn't even have in the first place?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, the players, I don't, you know, I haven't spoken to any of them, but I know this is the case, is that they are thinking at this point, wait a minute, we had agreed on something. Now they ask for, you know, we'd agreed on the new collective bargaining agreement with the way that escrow had been scaled out, the way that the flat cap was, all of that stuff. Now we're being asked for another 16% deferment. Because we're not going to give you 16%, we're going to negotiate that down to a new number. Pick the number, whatever you want, 10%, 8%, 6%, whatever it is. And we're going to get something for that. But we have to negotiate off something that we didn't have yet.
Yeah.
That it feels like you were assuming, you being the owners, you were assuming that this is already done and now we'll give back so the number is better. Give back of what? We haven't even agreed to anything yet.
Yeah.
And that's where this will rub the players the wrong way. However, as I said earlier, nothing surprises me, Aaron, because, you know, we can say, oh, these guys are billionaires, and they are. And for, you know, I live in Vancouver, and the Aquilini family owns the Canucks, and Tom Gilardi owns the Dallas Stars, and he's from Vancouver. Most of both of those two teams, their finances, their family wealth comes from the hospitality industry.
Yeah, which has been just devastated by all of this. Yeah.
I booked a plane ticket today, my first one since March. I usually fly in the last 15 years, 150 to 70,000 miles a year. I just booked so my point is I understand why they're looking for a deferral. And if I'm the players, I'm looking at this and saying, okay, so the choices we're going to have are going to be defer or don't play and get zero.
Yes.
Well, yep. I'm not a math major, but I can make that, I can make that work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't think this is because of given what the other option is, I don't think this is a death knell to the whole thing, but it's not going to taste very good.
No. And I said on this podcast a couple of weeks ago that just talking to players, you started to hear the word if in there. And I don't think it's a full-throated threat. I think it's more of a just floating the possibility, because that's been mentioned too. Like, if you want to go back on this thing, maybe we just don't play. Again, I don't think it comes to that, but I think the players want that card on their deck somewhere.
Sure. Of course they're going to use it and try and work that number down.
Yeah.
And I'm 100% in support of them. I don't think I would want to do this either. Yeah. However, if the option again is zero, what will end up happening, like, you know, don't play or come up with, you know, a deferment number, I can guarantee you the stories that will be written will talk about somebody making, you know, the guy's making 10 million bucks this year, and oh, they're going to lose the 10 million when they could have deferred 2 million, you know,
right.
whatever it might be. I don't want to say those guys aren't important, but those guys still have years on their contracts at 10 million bucks. The majority of the league, you know, like the median salary is half of the league is under that median salary.
Yep.
There's a lot of guys that are going to vanish.
Oh.
Every year there's 75 or so guys that never play again.
Right.
What if it's 100? Because next year, they're still going to have to work on that flat cap. And so guys that were free agents at 2.3 million, they're going to go away and not come back. And they're going to sign a player making 780,000. Yeah. Like, that's going to happen.
Yep.
Oh, and yeah. So if I'm the players, I'm like, damn it. This tastes terrible, but I got to make it work.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, and I'm going to do the best you can. You can be the toughest negotiator you want to be. At the end of the day, you don't want to be so tough that you're standing outside looking inside.
Right, right. And the owners know that. They know they've got that leverage.
Of course.
David Savard, Seth Jones, for sure two players from the Blue Jackets in on those calls. The players have not had much to say publicly. I think one thing that both sides are being very careful with right now is to not come across like the baseball players did months ago, where when you're in the economic reality that this continent is in, this world is in, really, but I'll stick to North America for hockey's sake, people are scared to death of losing their business. We put a tweet out earlier with the R Bar, the great hockey bar in Columbus, starting a GoFundMe page to meet their mm-hmm. monthly expenses, because here comes another month without hockey. People losing their jobs. They don't want to even have that discussion, because it's always the players that get hit over the head when they start talking about how unfair the system is, right? To your point, no one knows who the owners are. Most fans don't, and how much money they make. So it's always the players who have a dollar sign next to their name that become the easy target. But these two sides, I think within the next week or 10 days, we may have some sort of, they got to get going here if they're going to have any season at all. I think the hope of a January 1 start date seems pretty damn unlikely at this point, but maybe mid January is a possibility. Is that
I was told from the beginning of camp, whenever that might be, from the beginning of camp to the beginning of the of the season, they're going to need about 30 days.
Wow.
And some of that is going to be with quarantine. With, like in Canada, if you fly into Canada, you got to quarantine.
Yeah, right.
And so there are some quick tests now that move that along, but you're probably going to lose a week or 10 days anyway. While guys can skate in small groups and things, that's not really getting in shape for training camp for a season.
Yeah.
So it seems to me more mid-January. I know there's numbers popping around. I have in my head, Aaron, 48 games.
Yeah, right. It's a familiar number.
We've done that before.
Yep.
And that you can do that in mid-January. As far as baseball, somehow those guys got through to the World Series.
Yep.
And they awarded the World Series trophy, but they couldn't have looked worse every step of the way.
That's right.
Every step. Right. They looked like a bunch of donkeys, really, quite frankly. I'm a huge baseball fan, and I couldn't believe it. So I'm hopeful that hockey will be able to, to move forward quietly and efficiently, to come up with some type of way to have the season. I'm also of the mind, though, that if they say January 1st and then they say, oh, it's January 15th, and then it becomes February 1st.
Right.
I don't know why people get all tied up. There is no absolute to any of this. These are every date that you read is a suggestion.
Yep.
It's not in concrete.
Yeah.
It's a suggestion. I'm a pretty impatient guy, I would say, generally speaking. I think I'm getting better, but who knows? I also feel like I'm I want to know the answer. I want to chase after the answer. I want that answer now. I've learned that we're not getting that.
Yeah.
That's just not the way the world is. And it won't be that way for a long period of time.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Another bit of, I hate to call it news. It was certainly a promotion this week. The league, bless the league, they need some revenue. And they rolled out their reverse retro jerseys for all 31 teams. And the Blue Jackets jersey is, it's so retro, it's red, which is a little hard to get your arms around for me. The Blue Jackets wearing a red sweater. It's got the old logo on it with the green stick down the middle. Ugh. At least it doesn't have Stinger on the shoulder. It's not the worst thing. But there's some weird ones out there. I thought the Ducks one is just absolutely hideous, and I can't imagine anybody wearing it. But I wanted to ask you, as a proud Whaler, Ray Ferraro played for the Whalers, Islanders, Rangers, Kings, Thrashers, Blues. You were drafted by the Whalers. It was your first team. And I have a good friend, Michael Arace, Columbus Dispatch, former colleague of mine, who covered the Whalers back in the day and has just some wonderful stories. He romanticizes the Hartford Whalers, as many players do. What are your thoughts, Ray Ferraro, when you see that Hurricane, that incredible Whalers logo on the Carolina Hurricanes reverse retro jersey? I got a beef with it. I wonder if you do.
I had a bigger problem with it when they dropped it out of the sky into the regular season. Was it last year or the year before? Yeah, I hated it because they had done everything to distance themselves from Whaler history. Everything they could. Yeah. And I mean, let's not be naive. The whole thing is about revenue.
That's right.
And so they dropped those beautiful green jerseys with the great logo. And all of a sudden, Sebastian Aho's wearing number 20. Ugh. You know, and I didn't like it. As far as the retro jerseys, the fact that they're gray, I don't even care what they wear. Like, I think they're ugly.
Yes, that's awesome. Yeah.
So they can go ahead and wear the whale crest. I'll tell you a funny story, because that logo is just fantastic. The H underneath the whale tail inside the W, right? It's just so fantastic. Perfect. Well, yeah. When we were in the minors in the American League, we played in Binghamton, New York. And the logo, they just tipped it on its side. So it was a B.
Oh, nice.
And so we used to say we were a quarter turn from the NHL. All you had to do was get that B over to the right. W when you were there.
That's fantastic.
But I don't like the gray of the jersey. Yeah. It's the same as, the Avalanche are using, the Nordique stuff.
Yeah. Right.
I just happen to like that jersey better than the Whaler one, the Carolina thing, because I'm like, yeah, but it's the same thing.
It is.
Right.
It is.
You got to have part of your history somewhere. Some of the jerseys are awesome.
Yeah.
Others are not so good. Now my 10-year-old thinks the Wild Wing one is kind of cool.
See, he's probably right.
Old
guy
here. Probably is. They're not selling those jerseys to me and you.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
Like, those jerseys are to target younger people.
Totally.
Hey, that's kind of cool. That's like, there's a couple. The Minnesota jersey is a grand slam.
Yeah.
Like, I think it just looks amazing. I love the Kings one. They took two different jerseys and put them together.
Yep, for sure. Yeah.
But some of them, I don't know. Did the Islanders change anything?
Right. And some of them don't look that different at all.
The Rangers went to Lady Liberty, and I don't know.
Right. The Islanders doesn't look much different either.
No, the Islanders looks like the one that I wore in the games.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, but I get why they're doing it. And Aaron, again, we all know it's about revenue and all that.
Exactly.
Stuff. I think anything the league can do to drag itself by its own bootstraps out of being traditional, of being, hey, the way it's always been, I think that's a good thing.
I agree. And I laid off, like, I didn't even opine on Twitter because it's like, who gives a damn if this guy in Columbus thinks they're great or not? The idea is if people love them, they buy them. The league is hurting right now. If the league can raise revenue, that's fantastic. Go for it. If you love it, buy it.
I'm all good for it.
Yeah. What the hell? What am I going to say? Let's talk Blue Jackets now. This is an interesting team because we've had some good, really good talks about them at the rink, about where they're at and where they're going. They took a step back last year, at least they did on paper. I think they overperformed by a lot of people's measure in the postseason, taking out Toronto in the qualifying round. Pretty good fight against Tampa in the second round, a year after sweeping them. But this is a team. There's a lot of proud veterans there. There's a team that it feels like to me, Jarmo Kekalainen's idea, and a lot of teams have this idea, is you keep your team competitive for as long as you can. Sort of the St. Louis Blues, I think, are the reason behind this. And then maybe one year it pops. And they've been close to the hump. They haven't gotten over the hump. I don't count a first-round playoff win. It was great at the time and people celebrated it, but it's not the hump that they're looking for. Ray Ferraro, how big is the hump before this team? Can they get over it? Is it a matter of time? And how long do they have to get over this hump? How long is the window open before we start thinking of the Columbus Blue Jackets in maybe a different light?
Well, the hump for them, the issue for them, is that their best offensive players are defensemen.
Yeah.
Right? Like Jones and Werenski are just fabulous players. I mean, top end of the league defensemen. The issue for Columbus is never their effort. You know, it's generally not their goaltending. They don't score. They don't score easily. And that hump gets bigger and bigger for you as the games go deeper and deeper into the playoffs. So if you're going to make a run, you've got to have somebody you can count on that gets you an easy goal. Somebody that's no good that night, has a rotten night, gets one chance, and it's in the net. And so they don't have players like that. The problem is, you know, like you can say it and most people know it, but where are you getting a guy like that? Like, where do you find them?
Draft.
Right. Yeah. And if you don't draft in the right place, then you don't get them. You know, it's like I do 30 blue or Maple Leaf games a year. And, you know, the talk constantly there is they need a number one defenseman. Do you think they know that? They probably do. And they've probably gone around the league and said, hey, does anyone want to trade me a number one defenseman? And the answer is no.
Because we need one. Yeah. Hey guys, we need one.
Anyone can help me out? Well, the Blue Jackets are in the same thing. I mean, you know, the goals are hard to come by. They don't come easily. The closest they have to what I call is an easy scorer is Oliver Bjorkstrand. And the reason I say that is because there are chunks of games you're like, man, that guy isn't even near the puck. And then he gets a chance and he can shoot it.
Boom.
Right. Like, that's an easy score to me. Like Cam Atkinson is not an easy score. His goals are more work related. They're more, you know, so you've got to find the easy guy, the easy scorer. Their hump and how long that hump can be attempted to be attacked goes a lot with the age of your team. And, you know, their best forward, of course, is their youngest forward or one of their youngest forwards, and that's Dubois.
Yeah.
Right? Like the guy's a phenomenal player. So if you're, you know, so what would Dubois be now? Is he 22?
22.
Must be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. 22. Seth Jones is 26. Werenski's 23 or 4. Like those guys are young. That's the core of your team. The hump can be big, but because they're young, you've got a chance to climb over top of it if your draft picks hit. There's no question they're going to have to make a decision in goal. And I'd almost go to the place where, who can I get the best return for? And it might not be right away, but it might be during the season. It might be next summer prior to the expansion draft. I'm looking for an easy scorer.
Yeah.
Back for one of those goaltenders. because I got to hand it to, you know, to Columbus. Like, 2 years ago or whatever it was, you know, now the years, but when,
what year is it?
All the free agents were, you know, exactly. Like when Bobrovsky was leaving and Panarin was leaving and, you know, people were losing their mind. And the only one that really mattered to them was Panarin.
Right. Right.
And I said many times, as I talked about the Blue Jackets, maybe, just maybe, the manager knows more about his organization than the rest of the media.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't worry about Bobrovsky because of what they had behind them. But where the hell are you going to replace Panarin?
Yeah.
And we can pretty clearly see you can't.
Yeah, yeah, that was
heartbreaking. You're not finding a 100-point guy.
Oof,
right. It's like they had made a deal. They had won the deal. Torts loves Panarin.
Yep.
And, you know, so that all matters. And then he wants to go somewhere else. Like, are you going to do?
Yeah. And they did. They were willing to do literally anything he wanted. But what he wanted was New York City. And there's.
Right. And unless you can pick up a bunch of buildings, you can't do anything about it.
That's
right.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
So I think. You know, I think Columbus is a team built to always be a problem. To whomever they're playing, I can't see them as a legit top end contender until they can find a way to score some easy goals. Yeah. You know what else that easy goal score helps you with? A power play that stinks.
Oh, yes. Oh my. Yes. Unwatchable.
They have to find a way to become a more creative power play. I find it to be, a little bit, they're a little shy on the skill part of it, but they're a little bit too predictable.
Yeah.
And so the two of them don't, they don't go hand in hand very well.
Yeah, right.
And now two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
What does Anderson out, Domi in do for you? It's clearly it's a different look, different players. Domi's also a center iceman, so they're no longer Dubois and then a huge gap in their second and the third line. Yeah. They've got Domi behind Dubois. We'll get to Koivu in a second. What does that Anderson out, Domi in do for you?
Well, address the offense that you need to have. Look, I'm a Josh Anderson fan. I think he'll do really well in Montreal, and he's exactly what I think the Canadians would dial up as saying one of their great needs is size and, an ability on the wing. They're a small team. And yet I look at what Columbus has acquired in Max Domi, and he's kind of what they need. He's a creative player. He kind of lost his way last year in Montreal. 2 years ago, he had an excellent season.
Yeah.
He can create. The people around him become more dangerous, yet he just kind of lost it. And now in Montreal, they have Phil Deneau, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and Nick Suzuki, who they got in the Max Pacioretty trade.
Yeah.
And so they've got three youngish centermen. There's no place for Domi, even though he's a very good player. So I look at Domi, he's more of a pass than shoot center. It addresses an enormous hole that's not easy to address for them.
Yeah. Blue Jackets also acquired Mikko Koivu, free agent signing. I think the biggest part of this is it helps their third line. It gives them a solid third line center, they believe. It also allows Boone Jenner, who's been a good soldier for this organization, has played center the last 3 years while Wenberg's sort of come in and out of his game. It allows Jenner to go back to left wing, where he can just sort of strap his ears back and forecheck like the farm lad that he is. And I say that to be complimentary. He is a ferocious forechecker, as you know. Bluntly, let me just ask you, can Mikko Koivu still play? You've seen quite a bit of him coming through Minnesota and Vancouver through the years. What's he got left Is it still reasonable to think of him as a third line guy on a good team?
I would say not as a standalone third line guy. Maybe in a shortened season, yes. Over 82 games, that's a lot. You know, Miko's got, I mean, how old is Miko now? Is he 37 or 8?
Yeah, I think he's 37.
I played at 37, and there are nights, and I was a really well-conditioned player. Like,
yes, you were.
I knew as I was getting older, I wasn't getting any bigger. Conditioning can't be a question. When I got to my last year, there were nights I'd look at my legs and say, come on, guys, I need more from you tonight.
Right.
And you can see where you're supposed to go. You know where you're supposed to be. You know the time you're supposed to be there, but night after night after night, your legs can't quite get you there. And so there's going to be some nights for Miko like that. He's a ferocious competitor.
Yeah.
He is a glue guy in your room. Like, he will play the role that is asked of him, and he'll give you what he's got. However, there's going to be nights where it's not there. The legs aren't there. And that's why I say not a traditional full-time third line center, because there's going to be nights where Miko's minutes are going to be fourth line level.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably not going to be the plan, but that's what it's going to be when Torts takes a look and goes, oh my gosh, he looks like he's 37 tonight.
Yeah, he looks like he's right. Exactly. Yeah.
And it's going to happen. There's only one undefeated player in the history of pro sports, and that's time.
Yeah.
Wins every time.
Yep. And we're talking about a compacted schedule almost certainly too. So that'll be tough. Elvis Merzlikins is a guy that we've been writing about and talking about for a few years, anticipating, finally came to Columbus this past year, and the fans almost immediately fell in love with him once he got going. You've known Elvis far longer. You've seen Elvis certainly more and longer ago than Columbus fans have, and you have always liked this guy. I remember talking to you about him before he made it to the NHL. Tell me about Elvis and what you like about this guy and how fascinated you were by his performance last season.
Well, I was, quite frankly, a little embarrassed at the start. I'm telling everybody how good he was, and he couldn't stop a beach ball.
Right.
And you're like, and I'm like, no, he's good. Seriously. I'm telling you, he's a legit guy. And then, you know, he started off terribly. And I thought the big change for him, or the turning point, you know, he certainly got a more regular playing card when Korpisalo went down.
Yeah.
But he got less and less busy in the net as the year went on. He was, instead of like trying to jump all over the place to over anticipate the play, he was able to be patient in the net, more patient, and let his athleticism do its thing. I think he's a really good goalie. I was super impressed with Korpisalo during the bubble stuff, the playoffs.
Yeah.
But then Merzlikins went in and he was great too. Yeah. Like, it's a position of strength for them. I don't know. I just, his personality, I don't know Korpisalo's personality, so maybe I'm biased, but his personality screams starter. His mindset, there's an arrogance to him.
There is.
And I say that as a positive,
totally.
Not a,
yep.
Because he's not an arrogant person.
Yeah. Well, when I knew, like, so there's a lot to like about that guy, and he's a reporter's dream. He got lit up in Pittsburgh, and you walk into the room in Pittsburgh, and you know this well. When a goalie has a rough night, it can be hard to find that goalie in the dressing room afterward.
They can disappear.
Yes, that goes for just about anybody. We turn the corner, and Elvis is standing right there in the middle of the room, and it's basically like, let's go. Like, look, I'm facing the music. And he stood there and he talked. Like, he owned it in a way that, you're thinking, my God, is he going to run back to – is he just going to take the next flight back to Lugano? But the way that kid stood in there and faced it, I was like, wow, this kid, this might happen.
There's another layer to that too, Aaron, is that when you're sitting on the bench and your goalie gives up a stinky one,
it goes
through him from the blue line, you want to look back there and have that guy, like, there's just a presence to him that says, yeah, that's me, and it's not happening again.
Yeah.
You don't want a guy down there looking for nickels, like scraping around, you know, with his lip on the ground.
That's right.
You know, like, you want your goalie to be like, screw this, it's my net, get away from me, and I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I see that in him. And now, again, you know, we've brought up the compacted schedule a couple of times. Teams are not going to be able to play one guy this year. It's just going to be too packed. And this could be a legit strength for Columbus again.
Yeah.
Is that they're going to have two guys that, you know, somebody's going to get hurt, somebody's going to strain a groin, somebody's going to go into a slump, and they got another guy sitting right there.
Yeah. Speaking of big personalities, we've had lots of talks about him at the rink too. John Tortorella. You have seen the many sides of John Tortorella, and you find him a fascinating character. I hope I'm summing that up correctly. Discuss John Tortorella.
Well, I got to know John when he wasn't coaching. He was at TSN for a year, and so we were expecting this loud, bombastic guy.
Right.
And he shows up for the first meeting, and you got to lean in to hear him because, you know what John's, he's not a loud guy. Yeah. He's just like when you're in conversation with him. And we found him like gossip and speculation. And, you know, that's all stuff that, you know, unfortunately as an analyst, you're dealing with. He wouldn't. He's like, nope, not happening. And I will give you the moment I knew that he and I were well matched as personalities, and that I found him to be just, I didn't know. So it's his first show. It's the NHL preview show. About 20 minutes in, we're discussing all the Canadian teams, and we're talking about Ottawa. They were very good at the time. And I say, Jason Spezza's, you know, was still at the top of his game. And I'm like, I think as a coach, you got to give him a little leeway to turn the puck over because he's going to make plays that other people can't make. And like, this is not scripted. I'm just saying this. Yeah. And Tort says, bullshit. Like, we're on the air. And he says, bullshit. And we kind of stop for a second. And James Duthie, who is just a fabulous host.
Yes.
He turns around and looks at the clock and goes, oh, I win the pool, 22 minutes. Right. And he kind of saved the thing and it went to commercial. And Torts was like mortified that he had done
that.
Oh
my God.
He's like,
he couldn't help himself. Yeah.
And so, you know, over the course of time, you have a dinner here and a dinner there and you run into him here and then he's back coaching and, you know, exchange a note here and there. And, you know, he comes to Vancouver. So I see him a few times here for that one ill-fated year here. And it bothers me so much that he can't do a better job at the press conference.
Yeah.
I don't know why he can't. Well, to that end, Aaron, we had him on our podcast.
I heard that. Yeah.
You know, Darren Drager and myself have the Ray and Drake's podcast. We had John on and I asked him and he's like, I don't know. I said, well, what happens to you between the bench and the podium? And he's like, I just can't turn it off. And I don't know why he can't. And I hate trying to defend the John that I know, which is a fiery competitor, a really smart guy, a compassionate person, an empathetic person. Yet all we see is, oh, is that right, Brooksy? Or, you know, I'm not answering that question. Or to hell with you, I'm not. Like, I don't understand it. And I wish he could be different a little bit because that's not John, except the public perception is that's John.
Yeah, yeah.
And because that's what they see.
Yeah, well, and that's what they see a billion times over and over again because it's good copy. It's good video, what have you. I always say this and like – you have a relationship with these people. You do, and you maintain relationships with them, but you're not buddy-buddy as a beat writer and the coach.
Right, right.
But you have a relationship, and I've said this for years, like, the challenge, and I had Hitchcock for a while here in Columbus, too. Hitch is so damn interesting in his own way. He's different than Torts, but to the challenge in covering them is not making them the lead story every day because they're so damn interesting. And right. They can't not be interesting when they talk. You ask them a simple hockey question and you get an explanation that, A, you never thought of, that's like so incredible you can't wait to pass it on to people. And so they become the lead every day. And I'll put up with that sort of just incredibly honest insights. I'll put up with the occasional spout off back and forth when he doesn't like a question and you trade blows and you move on. I'll make that trade for really interesting copy any damn day of the week. That's where I come in on it. And other guys take it personally. I get that too. But I think there's so much more there. And we've talked about it too, the stuff, the frustration he has where he just can't, you know, he just can't handle the questions after the game when they come.
The crazy part is he's not like if not that people are going to follow him around, but if you could follow him around, he's not a disrespectful person. He's very polite. He's respectful you know, like if you're in a restaurant, he acts like you should act. Yet I think this vision is that he's a raving lunatic.
Constant. Yeah.
And he's just not. And I'm like, there are lots of guys, and Aaron, I'm sure around the league, you know, and I'm not gonna say don't you include John, because you see him quite a bit, but there are guys that you're happy to see. Absolutely. Like when you go into a city, you're like, oh, I can hardly wait. Even if it's just a hello and 2 or 3 minutes, like that's all you got. I'm like that in Columbus.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see John. I'm looking forward to seeing him. We end up with, you know, a conversation that is about the Blue Jackets for 3 minutes because he knows, you know, my job. And then we end up talking about, I don't know, what else?
Yeah.
You know, life, like family, everything else.
The world.
And I just, my wife sees a lot of similarities between John and I.
That's
and
awesome.
So she's quite entertained by it, actually.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and a lot of the times those spout-offs are followed by private conversations. What the hell kind of question was that, right? And then you explain it, and you get along fine. Or it's a text message. What the fuck? What the hell are you doing? And then you explain it, and he's fine. And he's always fine the next day. But yeah, it's interesting. Ray, we kept you far longer than we said we would, but it tends to be the case when it's a fascinating conversation. I thank you so much for doing this. I can't wait to see you in the rink again, be that Vancouver, Columbus, or anywhere. Good luck to you at the World Junior. That's always a thrill. I hope it goes well for you.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. It's great to be on. I'm glad you reached out, and I'm looking forward to the tournament for many reasons. One is that I'm excited to go back to work. Two is, amen, I just love the tournament. And, you know, you see these kids for the first time and, you know, and many of them, you know, become NHL stars.
That's right.
I had heard of Pierre-Luc Dubois, never seen him before. Now I'm watching him in the World Junior Tournament. Now I'm watching him with the Blue Jackets. Like that's a great, you know, Seth Jones, Seth was one of this team of players in Ufa, Russia. And, you know, we're in Ufa, Russia is a 4.5-hour flight east of Moscow.
Right. It's forever.
Like,
yeah.
Like it's forever and then an extra hour. And I'm like, who, like, how good is he? Like, I had never seen him before.
Yeah.
So I just love that stuff.
It's awesome.
Werenski the same way. And so I'm looking forward to it. I hope we get some good news on the NFL and, or sorry, the NFL, I'm watching the NFL, the NHL and the start. of, you know, of a season. And, you know, I hope the negotiations, I just have to hope 2021 is a hell of a lot better than 2020.
Yeah. Amen to that. I think it's going to be, I mean, it's so bad and so scary right now, but the news with the vaccine is really good. Maybe a few months from now, things will start to get back to normal. We can hope. We can hope. We Thanks can so hope. Much.
I hope everybody's well. Yeah, Aaron, yeah. I hope everybody's well in your house and with your friends and family. And I hope the good people of Columbus are looking after themselves and each other. And hope everybody's good. And let's have a good holiday and holiday season, and all the best for the end of 2020.
Yeah, wonderful, man. Thanks to you. Thanks to you. All the best.
Take care.
Take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.